Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gavaza, and for today, we are talking around the issue of payments, banking, technology, the intersection of all of those things, with a brand that many of us know, because if you have a bank card, chances are that it has the Visa logo on it. So we're going to be talking about some of the trends that are being seen right now by Visa. To get a sense of what all of that is about, we're going to be talking to Aldo Laubscher, who is the country manager for South Africa at Visa, to share his insights with us. Aldo, greetings.
Good morning, and it's great to be with you on the call.
I think just to get a sense of things, we all know Visa at this point. Anyone who's been to an ATM, who's used a POS machine, bank cards, they all feature the Visa logo. But from your end, just as maybe we can get a sense of how business is in South Africa, and perhaps the nature and size of your operation in South Africa.
Yeah, sure. So Visa has been around for more than 60 years, and that's globally. And in South Africa, it's been a very interesting journey. We've got a nice office, big office in Johannesburg. It's also our hub office for Africa, or Sub-Saharan Africa, where we service 5 different regions from. And roughly about 115 people in the office, so quite sizable. Focused on our bank and fintech customers, and very focused on payments and the technology around payments. If I quickly can just summarize from a Visa perspective, Visa is known as a financial services company to many people, but in actual fact, we are actually in a tech industry. So information technology. And many a times people would think, no, but that can't be, because your logo is all over our bank cards, like you've just said. But in actual fact, Visa is a technology company, and that technology makes digital payments work so wonderfully across the globe and also in South Africa.
You know, would you say that in an era where we're talking about so much fintech, especially on the African continent, would you say that Visa is probably one of the first fintechs in the world?
Yeah, we always refer to Visa as probably one of the largest fintechs around. And if you look at Visa, just from a digital payments perspective, it is actually quite amazing the number of patents/capabilities that has been brought to the advent of digital payments by a company like Visa. If you think Tap and Go, if you think the original magnetic stripe swipe, dipping a chip card and putting your encrypted PIN on it, all those technologies is what drove the transactional capability from a Visa perspective into our banks. And just an interesting stat, we process roughly 65,000, or can process over 65,000 to 272,000 transactions a second.
Wow.
And if you just consider that for a moment, on Black Friday in South Africa, for instance, we go up to about 300, sometimes 350, if you take the whole industry into consideration, transactions a second. So 65,000 to 72,000 is quite a bit. And if you think about a normal transaction, you go to ShopRite or Pick and Pay, you take your card out, you tap it at the terminal, the card terminal. That transaction from your card goes to the till point to the network to the bank, the one bank to the other bank by Visa, and all the way back in under 1.5 seconds.
That is incredible.
So it's about 14 to 17 hops, depending on which retailer or seller you go to. So it's actually quite amazing, and it happens consistently so quickly. It's quite amazing.
It is quite amazing, and to sort of hear that, I think what's astounding is the volume of transactions that are able to be processed. Because I'm thinking about what's actually going on right now. One of the big things in the financial sector is, you know, the rise of cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin and all of that, and, you know, on the blockchain. their rate, their ability to process transactions is very slow compared to what you've just, you know, described to us. So from that point of view, then when it comes to South Africa, you've already described this as a hub for the region and Visa's operations. What are some of the key things that you've sort of seen, and also what's been like, you know, running Visa during, you know, what can only be described as an interesting time in our history?
Very interesting time. And let me start with a couple of pointers on digital payments, just to give you a very interesting view of what we've experienced, let's say, the last 18 months. So Visa has been very well positioned as a digital payments company for many years. But what we saw during this whole pandemic and lockdown phase was the infrastructure and the building blocks that we put down actually accelerated significantly when the lockdown started, because people needed to still obviously buy the goods they needed to consume and food and the necessaries, but still pay bills and still make sure they interact with their children or their family via Wi-Fi, or keep themselves entertained via streaming over the network. So there were so many instances of digital capabilities that came to a fore during this pandemic. And if you wanted to, let's say, pay for Netflix, you could just use your Visa card. If you wanted to pay for, as a small business, let's say, for your Facebook or your Google advertising, you just used your card. If you wanted to order some of that very necessaries for your business and you couldn't go to the shop, you used your card. Obviously in a digital way from an e-commerce perspective. So that was a very interesting trend. And what we also saw was that people over 50, about 51% of them that transact on e-commerce today, did their first e-commerce transaction in their life during lockdown and in that first 3 months of lockdown last year. So that was very interesting. So even the older people gave it a shot, and they liked the experience to that extent that they keep on using it for certain services. So that's a very, very interesting stat. I think the second one was that about 48% of people that go to shops that we interviewed in a survey said that they would rather utilize tap and go and non-contact payment capabilities. And if the shop or the seller that they go to does not have a contactless capability, they would rather go somewhere else or to a similar shop that had that capability. So that was very interesting. So people got this whole, let's call it mantra, going to say, I don't want to touch the environment, so I like this whole tap and go experience. And then the third very, very interesting phenomena that we saw is that we grew our contactless payments as a network significantly during lockdown, because people wanted to tap, obviously. And in South Africa, it more than doubled in less than 11 months. And what we're seeing is that probably in the next quarter, we will be in a position where South Africa, everyday payments, more than 50% would be contactless. And that includes phones, right? So last week, Investec Bank launched Apple Pay. And I think 4 weeks before that, Absa Netbank and Discovery Bank launched Apple Pay. And it's also amazing to see immediate adoption. Most of their customers gave it a try, and many continue to use their phones and even their watch to do contactless payments now.
You know, Aldo, as you're talking, one of the things that I'm quite curious about is I like what you said about the fact that there's a lot of people 51 years and above, the older generations, that had their first e-commerce transaction, you know, during the pandemic period. And as you highlighted, a lot of the infrastructure and systems that were being used during the pandemic time and, you know, to do e-commerce transactions, etc., existed before people went into lockdown and all that. What was actually keeping people from actually engaging in e-commerce before it was sort of forced on people during the pandemic?
See, I think one thing that's very interesting, especially about South Africa, and to an extent another country in Africa that's similar, was Mauritius, is that we're fairly spoiled for choice from a payments perspective. So you can choose to pay via internet banking. You can choose to use your card. There's obviously cash. And then there's a plethora of other rewards, payments options. And then it's either real time or you can do delayed payment. You can do debit order. So because there's so much choice, people tend to go with what they're comfortable with and what they learn to trust. And if you 10 years, 20 years ago, learned to trust the use of a check, for instance, which was obviously closed off last year, you would have used a check up until the time that it's not available. If you're very used to using your internet banking, you would continue to use your internet banking. Or if you're used to use your card, you'll use your card, but you might be scared to use your card online. Or you might be scared to tap your card because there's a change here that you haven't learned to trust, or you haven't got to a point where you say the confidence around security makes you feel comfortable. But I think during this pandemic, people felt like, you know what, there's people around me that says it works. Let me try it with something. And you would have seen your favorite retailer, be it Woolworths or ShopRite with 60/60. Many of them were in a position where that first experience was telling. And if the experience was comfortable, it worked, the goods got delivered, it wasn't damaged, and the payment went off as it was showed to me, I think I can trust this. And the moment you start using it two or three times, thereafter you develop a feel of trust. And then many people will also go to their favorite websites, and then they'll slowly but surely try others because they now trust the payment mechanism.
Mm. And, you know, I think coupled with that question then is, given all the things that you've highlighted, spoiled for choice, the experience, etc., how much of the change that's actually been experienced during this time do you think is going to stick? Because, you know, we are creatures of habits at the end of the day. And, you know, some people might be forced to try the new technology and will use it for now. But the moment that they are able to go back to the older ones, they'll go back to it. Whereas other people will say, okay, this is wonderful. I can transact online. I'm using my Visa card and I'm here forever and ever. Amen. So where do you see things going on that end?
Yeah, so I see people going way more digital and starting to trust the digital side of the payment capabilities that their bank provides much more. And also where trusted brands like Visa are visible, you'll see a lot of fintechs also spark to life and generate new growth because it's on the back of that trust mechanism. So something I saw during this last, let's call it 18 months, that I've been at Visa was this whole piece around if I'm used to the transaction, it looks similar to what I've experienced. So let's say I do it in my bank this way, and I do it with a fintech, and it's very similar. People get that confidence in the transaction. I think the second thing that's very clear is that if it is quick, convenient, and predictable, that is what people like to experience. And that's why we see a lot of payments unbundling from the traditional. So if you used to do a payment this way, you will now do certain components. You'll be happy to add loyalty. You'll be happy to accept the extra points that you can get on the transaction because the payment now can be linked to a lot of other unbundled services, as we call them. And then from a third perspective, many of the banks are launching their own virtual payment experience where Visa's capability helps with that process. So I'm thinking of F&B that's launched their whole virtual pay capability and also a virtual card, which makes it very, very convenient because you don't sit with a physical plastic. You sit with your banking app, the same experience is available in your banking app. And at the end of the day, all of the transactions that you've just transacted is visible in your banking application and very easy to organize. So I think in the last 18 months, as per your question, I've seen many of these, let's call it consumer experiences coming to the fore, being tested and actually scaling.
You know, Aldo, as you're talking, one of the things that's, you know, striking to me is this issue of experience, because it really does seem as if anything that, I guess, eases the experience for consumers or reduces friction and stuff like that is going to go well, you know, on the payment side. So the natural question then becomes, when it comes to, you know, building new banking experiences, how many of the trends that you're seeing actually surprised you, you know, from what you've been able to glean, you know, from the trends, or have the trends that you've observed been a natural progression or something that you would naturally have seen to say, oh, okay, cool. In this scenario, we could have predicted that X, Y, Z is going to happen.
Yeah, I think home delivery was, the growth in home delivery was much more than I thought it would be. And I expected a bit more of a balance on, let's call it face-to-face transactions and then home delivery. And since the pandemic has its, let's call it the different waves of activity and people could go out again, people still went back, to transact in shops. But the home delivery kept on growing on the same trajectory as it was before. So it's as though people still use home delivery and go out at the same time. For me, that's a very interesting indication of people moving away from cash as the only dependency. So I would say, let's call it cash displacement in the classic terms, is happening because people still do home delivery and face-to-face. So that's a very interesting one. I think the second one for me was and the capability that we've enabled with cryptocurrency, which is very fresh from the start of the year. But to your point, simplicity and that experience from a customer perspective, it was very difficult to transact in crypto as an asset, right? But the moment you could get an alternative from the exchanges in a stable coin format like US stable coin, all of a sudden, it became a, let's call it a ready-to-trade or ready-to-use payment commodity. And we see stablecoin transactions flourishing in the U.S., and we expect that to go quite a bit across the globe in the next while as central banks issue or pilot the central bank digital currencies, which is a stable and, let's call it, fiat-linked, so a real currency-linked transaction, which makes it much quicker and allows us to transact in that quick transaction format I mentioned earlier, but still have the benefit of the crypto asset in the back being now opened up for use. So that was very interesting. And I think the last one that I'd like to quickly jump on was just how small businesses started to work in a different way, where people were very used to sending money quickly with, let's call it out, petty cash to go and buy because it's a hardware store that's needed, or top up some refreshments or stationery, etc., at the office, or would just do a quick EFT to pay the municipal bill, or do an EFT to pay a vendor. They would now all put it on their cards and make use of the real-time, let's call it, capability of showing I've paid. But the second piece, more control, the ability to stop certain merchant categories, so you can't go and buy goods online, but you can pay for your fuel, or you can go and buy at the stationery store, but you can't buy food, etc., etc. So very interesting to see how small businesses are starting to use that, and also use the capability of taking up payment acceptance, so they would be able to use or get paid via card, which very, very interestingly now can happen on a phone. So yeah, very interesting how this has transpired in the last while.
A natural question, given everything that's been said so far, and especially in light of the petty cash petty transactions example that you gave us now, one sort of starts feeling that your competitor at the end of the day, as Visa, in a fintech or digital environment, is cash. So where do you guys stand on cash?
Yeah, you're spot on. Cash is definitely still the major competitor. And the big thing about cash is there's always this point that it's never down, right? It's always ready to be used. And that's always been the key inhibitor for digital payments to grow aggressively against cash. Is it immediately available? Is it ready to consume? And I think where we now sit with Visa running a service that's, we call it the five nines. So 99.9999% available. And very predictably, only not available when we do maintenance. It means now anywhere, anytime, you can use Visa, whether you're pouring petrol at 3 o'clock in the morning or buying a quick snack at the tuck shop of the off-the-fuel retailer, or during the day or online, the service is available, and therefore the ability to displace cash becomes more relevant. Now that you can also have that card of yours on your phone, and you can tap for the Gautrain, or you can quickly tap for a Coke at the store, or the street vendor very soon on his phone can have the capability for you to tap your phone, your card against his phone, and the payment just happens. That's where the new, let's call it the new advent of cash displacement is emerging, and I'm very excited about what that can bring to play in the market. And I think it's going to help a whole lot of people and small businesses to train in a more efficient way. Because if our small businesses really gets kicking in again and growing, that's the, let's call it the workhorse, the heart of our economy to get starting again.
When it comes to, everything that you've spoken about, how far along do you think South Africa as an economy, or just our way of life, because there's a lot of informal business that's done, in South Africa, and that is primarily done in cash. I'm thinking about riding in a taxi, for example. The friction of taking out your phone and then initiating a payment. I don't know, maybe if there was a QR code or something like that, whatever it is. But if we are to say that the move from physical cash to purely fintech is a spectrum, where do you see us as an economy on that spectrum?
I think we're much, much more advanced now. And let me give you a quick few examples. So if we rewind 5 years ago, and we look at our bus services like City of Cape Town or Rea Vaya in Johannesburg, or the Tshwane Metro bus service, you had to install quite expensive equipment in the bus. It had to be linked to a central database. You had to give the capability to top up the vouchers or the cards that you used to tap. So it was quite a involved process, but it was a good start. Where we sit now is that you could actually, like you said, a QR code. You can stick a QR code in the bus against various ticket amounts if you want, and you can scan that, and there's your ticket and your payment. Or you could just have the bus driver's Android phone, like a Uber driver would have, in the bus with the bus application open, and you go and tap against his phone with your card or with your phone, and all of a sudden the payment's done. Now that service, for instance, can very easily be replicated in a taxi, because in a taxi it was very expensive to install all these card readers, etc. And now it becomes much more, let's call it palatable, commercially viable, and you can reuse services that exist every day, like your cell phone. So I think we're in a much better space. I think it's probably going to take us a couple of years still to get that adoption up and people feel comfortable and that the ease of use is worked out in a way that a taxi, as you said, works very simple and seamless. But the technology, I think, is now there. And to back that up, 81% of South Africans now are banked. So it's only about 19 and very soon 18% of South Africans that hasn't got a bank account. Every bank account has a card to it. So effectively, every South African, or 80%, 81% of every South African in the country has a card to transact, or cash. And they sit with both those alternatives, and I think the race is on.
Because you've just brought out that issue of the rate of banking at 81%, one can't help but to take a step back to look at South Africa within the context of its neighboring countries, the African continent and the like. So taking that step back, how are you seeing payments on the continent? Because much lower rates of banking, you know, more informalized economies as Visa, because you did say that you guys are serving a number of different countries from your hub.
Yes. So, look, South Africa is a very interesting country within the continent's context. It's got a first world payment service, but still a lot of third world economic activity that's not linked or digitized or financially enabled. So there's a lot of scope for growth in South Africa, and we sit with a very good platform to capture that. So we're in a good space. If you go across the borders, I think what you find, as you go further north, is that there's a very, very strong marketplace play from the mobile network operators. They've got strong, what we call closed-loop payment systems like M-Pesa and EcoCash and Airtel Money and MTN Momo and many others. And they have captured a very, very interesting and a strong base of customers that they help do, many cases, bulk low-value payments. So all these small transactions, which traditionally are cash transactions, they've been quite successful to capture. And from a Visa perspective, what we obviously aim to do is to partner with most, if not all, of those mobile network operators and put the Visa credential, as you would have a physical card with that 16-digit number on, the digital version of that you would want to put behind, let's call it a digital wallet of a mobile network operator. And when you do that, immediately that wallet of that mobile network operator becomes capable to transact anywhere where you see a Visa sign, which has got a very powerful, let's call it a roadmap of growth and enablement of payments. So that's a big strategy of ours. We currently in the process of doing pilot transactions with MFS Africa, which has got a big base of mobile network operator wallets that they've partnered with. We're also busy with M-Pesa in Kenya, Safaricom. And then there's a couple of other interesting ones in the roadmap that we can't talk about at present yet.
Hopefully we'll be able to get some details whenever some of those things come online. But one of the things that does become apparent from what you're saying is that, because I was actually going to ask whether you feel that some of these other fintech operators and developments are competitors, but if there's partnerships, that it means there is that integration, because I do understand at the end of the day, the big thing that always worries fintechs is interoperability. And I guess a partnership with Visa, just given your footprint across the world, helps when it comes to, you know, some of those things. As we round up, Aldo, How do you see things going in terms of you know, the trends that you've highlighted all through the discussion? If someone is listening, because we have a lot of business people that will be listening, small businesses, medium, large corporates, etc., and they say, okay, Aldo, I'm hearing everything that you're saying, but you know, what should I actually be paying attention to implement in my business, especially those businesses that are customer facing, what would you say to them?
I would say a couple of things. I think one, if you can get your business ready, if you're not yet ready to accept cards or digital payments online, so e-commerce, it might be a good time to start doing that. We have done a survey for a lot of small businesses, and we did find about 58% of them said that this is a very, very important aspect, and they want to enable their businesses as soon as possible. So I would be talking to my bank as a small business and see what options do they offer me to get enabled to accept digital payments, and also to be digitally enabled to pay. I think the second one that's critically important is to stay on top of future trends of payments, because the digitization of payment controls, the digitization of real-time payments, the digitization of crypto-enabled payments is coming. and keep your ear on the ground, as they always say, and be ready for that next wave of adoption. And then lastly, I would say is use your phone as a as an asset for the business. And if it is capable of accepting payments and you're a small business on the go, why not use it? It is a great way to leverage your payment capability as a business.
All right. So that's been us with Aldo Laubscher, who is the country manager for South Africa at Visa, giving us some insight into the nature of their business and also some of the key trends that they've been observing during the pandemic period, and some of the trends that Aldo says are going to help to drive business and payments forward. Some of the things that he's highlighting is the fact that just engaging in the digital economy is greatly important at this time, just making sure that you have that ability, because in certain cases like contactless payments, for example, some consumers, a sizable number of consumers are actually saying they would actually go to a competing shop or provider just so that they can get that type of capability. Also highlighting what's been going on in the rest of the continent where payment options are a bit less, but there is integration where Visa is coming on board to work with some of the mobile payments providers. He highlighted the partnership that they have with the likes of M-Pesa, for example. Also talking about some of the market dynamics, such as the rate of banking in South Africa versus in other parts of Africa, and also just ending off talking about some of the things that businesses should be paying attention to, such as enabling digital payments, but at the same time making sure that things like smartphones and mobile phones are used as an asset that can actually help you to grow that business. Aldo, thank you so much for being with us.
Madiba, thank you for the opportunity. It was great to chat to you.
This is Madiba's Tech.
Always a fascinating discussion when we talk about the intersection of financial services and technology, and always good to get a sense, especially from a large player like Visa, because they've been around for a long time, and for them to still be relevant at a time like this where technology is rapidly advancing as much as it is, really does mean that they must be doing something right. But also more importantly, adopting to the different types of developments that are going on there. So one of the things I enjoyed about what Aldo was talking about, because there is an awareness of what's going on in the cryptocurrency space. There is an awareness of what's going on in the rest of the fintech space, mobile payments, etc. And there isn't that attitude of looking at those things as if they are competing, or that they're nascent, or that it can never be something to worry about. But because one always thinks about what happened to the likes of Kodak, right? To say that they actually invented the digital photograph, but because they were so focused on their legacy business, digital photography ended up being the end of their business. So embracing and just keeping up with the times, and I guess it works as well because Visa does consider themselves to be a technology company, right? And I'm sure that then helps them keep up with what's actually going on in and around the world. Interoperability, as far as I'm concerned, is probably one of the big things that businesses and the likes of Visa have to deal with, because we can talk about fintechs left, right, and center, but if there is friction in terms of transacting where one shop accepts one service but not another, then it becomes difficult, because at the end of the day, as fintechs, you need to chase ubiquity. You need to be, you need to have a standard that's actually accepted all over the place. So partnering with the likes of Visa does make sense. Whatever your innovation is, as long as it can be plugged into as many businesses and other services that there are out there. So going forward, it's going to be interesting to see how the space does evolve, and especially how more the established players in the financial services industry do embrace technology, and how they work together with the new innovative fintech companies to be able to drive financial inclusion forward in Africa. And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So from myself and the rest of the team, it is a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.